Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, welcome in. Glad you're along, everybody. Happy Thursday to you. Let's hope it is a happy weekend for the Jacksonville Jaguars as they head down to Tampa with at least 2,000 strong Jag fans in attendance, making the exodus down to Raymond James.
I'm excited to see that because I haven't seen that at a Jaguar road game. Just to see what kind of noise they make and how few Tampa fans show up,
which will be awesome. And hopefully there's something to make noise about for the Jag fans this weekend. They've done these road trips before, Ryan. They just haven't done it in these numbers before, yeah. And that makes sense. It's a quick drive down to South Central Florida. I'll call it South Central. Is where they're living right now. Is Tampa really Central Florida?
Gulf Coast.
That's how they right. Is that how they identify Gulf Coast? I don't really care, quite frankly. I don't live there. A bunch of old people
Tampa.
Do.
No idea.
I don't know, Tony. We've made that drive several times because it's worth it to go simply for the press box food alone.
Yeah, it's nice.
If you're going to go to Tampa. Best press box food in the league, right? Don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, I don't even think there's...
Philly's good.
Philly's good, but Tampa brings in those students from the Culinary Institute down there, and they... they set up the carving stations, all that good stuff. You got to have something, Ryan. If the team's not winning games, you have to have something to look forward to in the press box.
Well, if they're listening, what I like about a perfect press box food deal, bag of chips at halftime and a Snicker bar after the game.
And they have that, right? They actually have, like, real candy bars.
If people cover this team, they'd be taking 20 of them, but who knows?
That's true. Deep pockets. Look.
I'm thinking more hoarders.
Okay, either way. Whatever way you want to look at the red zone issues, the penalty issues from last week, as you said, they keep shooting themselves in the foot. They're making mistakes. 13 penalties, including 5 on the one drive. Let me ask you this, though. Is this something that can be remedied by coaching? What role does coaching have in players who clearly aren't playing disciplined enough football if they're committing that many penalties?
Well, I'll preface it by saying what I wrote in Wednesday's paper. This hasn't been a problem for Gus's teams through 2 years and two games. And then the stats are sort of skewed New England because he had 52-yard penalty, a 30-yard penalty, but there was still a lot of, there's a legal formation, that kind of stuff. My question is, okay, the coaches are probably presenting that information. Are the players listening? I mean, how to line up right? I mean, that's supposed to do that every play.
What do you mean by that? Are they, you're saying like tuning them out? Or
who's not paying attention? Are the coaches not paying attention to that detail? And enforcing that, say, on the line or off the line, or are the players just daydreaming? So because that shouldn't happen. On the penalty stuff, it's a miracle how many penalties on offense they overcome. First and 20, they still keep a drive going. First and 15, same thing. A couple backbreakers. But my thing, and I asked this to Gus on Monday, is where's the accountability? If this keeps happening, what are you going to do? If guys keep getting on personal fouls on the quarterback, will they be benched? Will they be taken out of the game for 10 snaps? If guys on offense continue to line up wrong or have false starts, will they be removed from the game? Got a total non-answer to me, which says a lot. Because if I'm a player in this locker room right now, I know I could commit a penalty. I'm going to keep playing.
Well, is it a case of when you're a team that's struggling to win, right, I understand what you're saying about having discipline and holding guys accountable, but at some point you say, all right, we're holding them accountable. The guy made a mistake. We're going to take him out for 10 plays, which is going to then negatively impact everybody else out there. You know what I mean? Is it a bit of a rock and a hard place there to do that? I mean, if your quarterback makes a mistake and he throws into triple coverage and gets picked off, you're not going to bench him, right?
Different position. Let's kind of split the difference then. Let's say a defensive lineman has a neutral zone infraction. He wears number 90 here. He should immediately come out of the game for at least a snap. Just to say, hey, that's what happens. I mean, if you do it again, it'll be more snaps. If you do it a third time, it'll be more snaps.
So what if you're down in a situation where, I'm just saying, what if it's a guy who normally is reliable? Are you going to hold everybody to that exact same standard? One mistake and you're out for a snap?
No, because you treat everybody differently.
Okay, well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm asking you. I mean, and that's let's, what I'm saying. Guys who are the better players who make mistakes are going to be treated differently.
guys, the guys up front on defense, your Clemens's, your Branches, they keep making penalties. They've made penalties for 2 years here. Chris Clemens doesn't even have to practice anymore. So, I mean, there's no accountability in terms of him going around here. So he finally gets a sack. It's a penalty. So, you know, all the unfortunate – I mean, let's say Luke Jokel gets a holding penalty. I probably wouldn't take him out of the game. But let's say he gets three false start penalties in one half. To me, you got to send him and say, that's – you can't tolerate that.
Right.
Let's say on defense a guy jumps off sides. Okay, that's one. I mean, it's almost like, do you have a three-strike thing? Whereas if you're – Devon House, and he gets your, and you grab a guy's jersey to sort of save a touchdown. To me, that's different. So it's almost a case by case basis on penalties. But I think as a head coach, don't you think you have to send a message to say, okay, this is unacceptable, besides just telling them that's unacceptable?
I gotcha. But I guess my point is, and I'm not trying to nitpick this or turn this into a big thing, but if you do that and you run the risk, I think, of having guys feel like they're being held to different standards, and maybe that's okay. You know, maybe that's just the real world in the sports world. Certainly, like you said, you're not going to take Blake Bortles out because he's your quarterback if he makes a couple of mental mistakes in the game. But at the same time, if the standard is one, I think one is a little stringent. Guys do make mistakes, and you know they're going to jump and they're trying to anticipate a snap count or whatever, and they jump into the neutral zone and they're trying to play aggressively. You're not likely to take Jared Odrick off the field, I don't think, as opposed to.
But you don't have
Andre
a history
Branch.
With Odrick, with Andre Branch.
Well, that's
you do.
The thing.
With
do
Chris
you,
Clemens,
you build
you
up
do.
A history.
Tony,
with these
guys. You probably hit my point a little bit. It's okay. Does the clock start at the start of every game again?
Right.
You know, I would say no. I mean, you sort of accumulate those strikes. So it's just
right at some point. Then there's a threshold that gets passed.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're watching that game against Indy. Andre Branch jumps offside. You're like, seriously, again?
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's the attitude that you have with that guy. And there's not a ton of guys on this team that you have that kind of attitude with. I'd be curious, Ryan, here in a moment, when you're looking back at the penalties for this team, to see how much is kind of that pre-snap stuff and how much of it is, like, in the flow of a football game.
You gotta give me a heads up on that question.
Yeah, we'll wait until after the break. We got a timeout coming up here. By the way, Bull City Cap tweeting out, Tyler passed this along to me, that it sounds... Old City West, my bad. That's West with the St. Augustine branch of the Bold City Brigade, tweeted out about how many tickets were sold in Duval. According to a source with the Bucks, told him that an estimated 8,000 tickets for Sunday's game have been sold to people from the Jacksonville area. So it's not all directly going as part of, you know, the bus trip and everything that's going with the Bold City Brigade, but 8,000 people are going overall, and at least from tickets, I would imagine the vast majority of them are Jag fans getting ready to invade Raymond James Stadium this Sunday. You can invade the program at 641-1010 today. That's the phone in line. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. We will get to your tweets. We will get to your phone calls asking you today, courtesy of the Tom Bush family of dealerships, which injured Jaguar would be more vital to a victory this weekend for the Jags if they're able to play? Julius Thomas, Paul Posluszny, both of them.
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Do you like that question?
Good. I think it's an apropos question.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What do you tell you?
No, it's if it was.
Is he trying to earn brownie points this morning?
I'm just giving the guy credit.
Oh, thank you.
Fans a little tough on you.
Thank you, Ryan O'Howard. That's all right. Let him hate my questions on Twitter. You come up with 300 questions a year, and see what you can do. All right. I'm sure they'll be sending me a raft of them coming up anytime now. Unfortunately, they're all muted, so I won't see them in my Twitter timeline anymore. That's fantastic. All right. 641-1010. We'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up. Blake Bortles as well. They had their midweek press conferences yesterday. All that to get to and a lot more with Ryan O'Howard of the Florida Times Union and Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. This is Jaguars Today live at EverBank on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Well, you know, the good thing is, you know, both my legs are fine, so running routes, it went really well. Definitely was excited about that. So, you know, just continue to sharpen up and try to get back to the level I was at as soon as possible.
JT?
Yes.
And JT.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. How about that? Julius Thomas, the one I'm more concerned with, Tony. I don't know about you. But Julius Thomas, I'm trying to get back to where he was. Practicing without a cast yesterday or a brace on his hand. What's the sense you're getting, Ryan O'Halloran?
Before that, I'm going to clean up the penalty thing. They had 13 penalties. Seven were what I would say unforced errors, motion, false start, running out of bounds.
Running out of bounds, come back in. Right,
so, okay, so that's the problem.
Yeah. That'll be a homework project for you for next week, just what their penalties look like.
Work ahead.
Right.
On Thomas, you sort of read it. If you read his words and sort of were standing in front of him, he's not playing this week.
I don't think so.
Yeah, and I don't think this was ever the plan. The debut him here in week five. I mean, they said week four, but they'd be pretty clear it was going to be later. So have him run around this week, see how it responds over the weekend, put him through a regular practice next Wednesday. I think that's when you get your sign if he's ready to go against Houston. Marks, I wouldn't expect to play either.
This was Gus yesterday asked if he would be surprised if Julius Thomas goes this Sunday.
He was limited today. He went out there. I think he caught some balls, but he did what he was clear to do, and the other things he still couldn't do.
Well, that's an open-ended answer there. Okay, what isn't he allowed to do? Because you're not going to hit him in practice.
See, I wonder if it's just blocking now. You know what I mean? As opposed to actually catching the ball.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's one thing I asked Julius about yesterday. I said, is this a moving target? I mean, could you go if Wednesday went well, could you go full on Thursday? And he was like, well, it's sort of a continuing day-to-day process. I think they want to see how he gets through these two practices. Have him doing some of that hand-to-hand combat blocking stuff next week, and then he'll be cleared to go.
All right, regardless of whether or not he will play, we don't know if he will. We don't know if Paul Posluszny will play. That's why we ask you today which one of these guys would have a greater impact on the Jags' chances for victory if they did play. Paul Posluszny, Julius Thomas, you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Howard, at 1010XL, Fat Tony as well. And now I've gotten dozens of tweets on, did I get muted? No, you didn't. Okay. All of you who just tweeted that, no, you did not. All right.
There's no mute button on Twitter.
There is a mute button on
it's
Twitter.
It's called block.
No, there's a mute button now. You can mute somebody in addition to that. Blocking means they can't read your tweets. They can't even send you a tweet. Okay. But on mute, they can read your tweets. They can tweet at you all you want. You just don't see them. You muted them. You muted their
and
response.
They'll never know.
So, feel free. Oh, I'll tell them. I don't care. Feel free to send me all the nasty tweets you like. I'm not going to read them. How about that? How about that? All right, let's get to Gus Bradley from yesterday. As midweek, put the last one behind you, on to Tampa. Here's his opening statement.
Got an important matchup this weekend, and how we go about it, I think, is important. Tampa has got a very good defense, top 10 defense. You see great speed with their linebacking core. Obviously, McCoy, very talented up front, and in the secondary as well. With their offense, I think they really want to get going with the run game. Appears that way. They got big play guys on the perimeter. It'll be a different challenge for us this week. These guys have got height and size, and one was targeted, I think, 17 times in one game, and next game another one was targeted 15 times. So they go to both of them. But overall, very challenging week.
Well, touch on Bucks defense. McCoy's an elite defensive tackle, but they're 30th against the run.
Lavonte David is not having the type of year that he has typically had since he's come into the league.
There's a lot of tackles, but no takeaways. And Alexander's a rookie linebacker. He's making a lot of tackles. Where I think the Jaguars couldn't challenge Tampa Bay is they're banged up in secondary. I mean, Major Wright came back to practice yesterday, but Jonathan Banks, probably not going to play. He's replaced by Tim Jennings, a rookie. So,
Altheron Verner's been in and out of the lineup because he hasn't played well.
Yeah.
That's a big money
guy. He
played
five snaps last week.
Right.
So I think some of their statistics are good, but I think the Jaguars do probably see some opportunities to get down the field.
What is the best opportunity, Tony? What is the single best thing you think works in the Jags' favor? What's the most likely path to victory for Jacksonville this week?
With the way they've been defending the run, probably the run. I mean, I still think so. And Yeldon coming off his first 100-yard game, he's a guy that they've been willing to feed the ball here in the last 3 weeks. I mean, I think he had 25 carries this week. He had 22 against Miami. So they're certainly willing to commit to that. And Tampa, maybe they've been so good against the pass because they've been so bad against the run. Maybe it's one of those things, but continue to do that. And I think frustrate Jameis Winston early and I think that you can have him. If you let him get some confidence early in a game, you could be in trouble against them, but find a way to frustrate him early.
Brian, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think this defense, and they were not very subtle talking about yesterday. They see openings for takeaways on Sunday. And not just saying Jameis threw four interceptions and one lost fumble, is throws into traffic, really stares down Jackson and Evans, two very good receivers. So, you know, maybe if they try some coverage stuff, bracket one of those guys, they can get maybe an interception that way. But I also think this is a Bucs line that had a fill-in center last week, has two rookies, one at left tackle, one at guard. So if I'm the Jags, I stick with some of the pressure I tried to bring against Indianapolis.
And despite that, the line still is able to open up holes for Doug Martin to the tune of over 100 yards last week. It's interesting, though, because, Tony, the second thing you said was Jameis Winston, right, and his what can be very erratic plays four games into his career. First thing out of your mouth was the opportunity to get some takeaways, right? Is it a bad thing that we sit here in week five and we say maybe the key to this game is the fact that Jameis Winston might just hand you the ball three or four times?
Yeah, I mean, it's
you know, instead
it's,
of, hey, what are we going to do to go
on.
Take it away?
Yeah, you're exactly. Counting on that.
You know, like,
so.
Hey, it's not like, hey, Blake Bortles, we got some good matchups. We think we can put up some points because of this. And I understand what you're saying. Tony, you know, you can get after him. You can rattle him a little bit. You can run on the Buccaneers. But it is interesting that the first thing, because, and that's kind of why I asked you, because that's, I think, maybe the biggest thing they have going for them is Jameis Winston's fearlessness at this stage of his career. And Blake Bortles, you know, talked about that a little bit, saying, hey, it's something you got to learn, that you can't put everything on your back and make the big play every time you go out there. This is a guy who's not accustomed to losing many football games. Already lost more games in a month than he lost in 2 years in college as a starting quarterback. So it's got to be some frustration level there with Jameis Winston. And then Gus going on was asked about the cornerbacks and matching up with these receivers, whether it's a kind of a unique challenge with Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson facing them.
It is, just because of their size, you know, and it's not just, you know, the balls going up, you know, the fade balls and things like that, but they use their body very well to shield the defender. So that's what presents the challenges.
Two of the biggest, I mean, maybe the biggest pair of starting receivers in the National Football League, right? Mm-hmm. So you got jump ball opportunities. And when they have Austin Seferian Jenkins healthy, which he is not right now, you've got a big lead three receivers in the National Football League, which you figure ultimately will work to Jameis Winston's benefit. But, you know, look, Mike Evans has been very quiet so far this year. This is not the week you want him to break out. He was a 1,000-yard guy, 12 touchdowns last year. Vincent Jackson is still getting it done at a high level. How well-suited is this Jags secondary combined with the pass rush to deal with this?
Well, this is the kind of game they brought House in for, like last week, is they sent pressure, they played man on the outside, and Devon had his best game of the four he's played. He needs another big game. There's questions with injuries with Colvin. He had the red jersey on yesterday. So, okay, McCray and Gratz, one of those guys going against the other big receiver. So, and then also, who the heck's going to start? Free safety. And is it going to be Evans? Sample wasn't out there yesterday. Sergio's still trying to come back. So, I mean, if I'm Tampa Bay, I'm also feeling good that I'm going to be able to score some points.
Probably. Gus Bradley, we had his update on Julius Thomas a moment ago. Here's a quick update on Sendarek Marks.
We kind of pushed him today, too, similar in that he went through practice. We limited some of his reps, but we got him in some one-on-ones today, and we'll evaluate the film and see where he's at.
Well, that's another step for Marks, because I think this is the first time he did one-on-ones. So, I get this question a lot, is why didn't they just keep him on PUP? The reason they didn't is if he was on PUP, he couldn't do that.
He couldn't be practicing at all.
He couldn't put on a helmet.
Right.
So keep him on there. Keep him on there. Then you're looking at week 9 or 10 because he needs
to
practice
almost the whole season.
Or, you know, as opposed, and also, I think he plays week 7. They've always sort of been looking at London as that game for a debut. But maybe that timetable has moved up to Houston.
Well, you don't think either one of these guys, Thomas or Marks, is playing this week? Gus was asked, who is more likely to play first in his estimation?
You know, it's all based on the doctors, you know. It's hard for me to say. You know, I think they both face different challenges. Senderic, it's not only, I think, his, you know, his knee is in good shape, but just the play after play rigors that it takes to play in the defensive line. That's the challenge he faces. You know, with Julius, it's just, it's the hand. You know, he's been running and staying in shape. So, you know, how far that comes along and what the doctors feel comfortable with clearing him on. I think that's more day to day.
Well, that was a non-answer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I get in one circumstance, if you ask and you want an answer to that, but if you say, well, I think Marks is more likely to play first, and then he doesn't, you know, then people are asking, well, Gus said you'd be ready to go. How come you're not ready to go? You know what I mean?
If I'm him, I'd say, not sure.
Well, isn't that basically what he said?
Just do it quicker, Gus. I want to get
sorry. We like, you know.
I'm going to be traffic.
He gave you the answer that you were looking for. He just gave it in his own way in that particular instance. All right, we'll take a timeout here if you want to get in. 641-1010 is the number. More from Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles as well. Coming up, by the way, Ian Rappaport reporting, if you are interested, that Andrew Luck is not likely to play tonight from what he's hearing as the Colts take on the Houston Texans.
And it's all over the place now. Matt Hasselbeck's going to play tonight.
He will get the start tonight.
Yeah, Luck is out.
So he's out, officially ruled out for tonight. Because they brought in Josh Johnson. I was watching NFL Insiders yesterday afternoon on ESPN, and they said, well, this isn't, I think it was them who were saying, this isn't really to do with the Luck. This is to do with the fact that Matt Hasselbeck is sick. And then they added, in fact, he got sick on the sidelines during the game against the Jaguars this week. And it made it sound like he was puking on the sidelines. So not only did he get beat by the 40-year-old quarterback, he got beat by the 40-year-old quarterback who was sick. And apparently he's had, like, the flu for the last several days, and it was coming on Sunday. So that'll probably make everybody feel that much better about the circumstance. All right, there you have it. Back more with Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey on Jaguars Today, straight ahead on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Who's Mike Dempsey talking to at the Metro Diner chat counter? Find out on Jaguars Today. 10 to noon weekdays on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
All right, coming up at about 11:15 today, 11:20, TJ Reeves, Buck sideline reporter, will weigh in on what's going on with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They did get a road win this year against the New Orleans Saints when everybody thought they were getting crushed in week two. So you never know. Jags can afford to take anybody lightly at this point in time. And I think the prevailing feeling is, if not now, when? I think the Bucs are probably as weak a team as you got on your schedule, at least as it appears right now the rest of the way. I am quite sure and well aware that the Buccaneers look at this game the same exact way that the Jags do. So doesn't mean the Jags can't get this done. This one on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Funny how you say we can run on Tampa just like we were supposed to be able to run on the Pats. This team is just not good. Wish you guys would admit it. Everything we think they should be able to do, they just don't do.
Did you listen to the star of the show, moron? I said they're not good. Don't be Who's that idiot?
Do you
idiot?
Want to mute that text?
Mute that idiot.
I can't mute the text line.
Did anyone say they're good? We said Tampa's really bad at defending the run. What can the Jaguars do this Sunday? They ought to be able to run the ball.
T.J. Yeldon ran for over 100 yards this past week. Maybe they can do that again.
Right. I mean, we could just spend 5 days, you know, our 2 hours on here every day just saying, you know what, the Jaguars suck.
They're really
bad. When we're previewing the matchup, we could go, well, maybe they could be able to. Nope, they're not going to be able to run the ball. I mean, let's be serious about this.
Yeah, the Bucs are 30th, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They might not be able to run the ball.
They didn't run the ball against.
If you're looking at matchups that may favor them, that is one.
Sure.
Right?
And Bortles has been okay to this point in the year. Certainly his statistics are way better than they were last year, and that's not helping them in the win-loss column a whole lot, but they've been okay. And there was actually an article written today on ESPN that was talking about third down specifically, and it was, they call it the Alex principle because Alex Smith is so terrible on third downs at just checking the ball off. So you get a rating on each third down play. So say it's a third down and 10. If you throw the ball 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage, you get a rating of negative 13 on that play. So your rating on a play is whatever yardage short or past the first down marker you throw the ball on that play. Whatever that happens on the play is independent of the actual ranking.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a very good stat to me.
But it also went on to say that the numbers show that if you throw the ball, say, basically within a yard or behind the line of scrimmage on, say, a third and 10, your percentages on that play of getting a first down is 13%. If you throw it past the sticks, just throw it past the sticks, it goes up to about 36%. So it triples your odds of converting that third down. I bring it up because Blake Bortles was fifth in the league this year in that stat. His third downs, he basically averages throwing the ball about 4 yards past the markers on third downs. There are things this team is doing okay, and there are things this team is doing awful. And there is this balance in between of trying to figure out on a week-to-week basis what is working for this team. I think the run game is working all right for this team. It's not working on the level that we'd all like to see it working on. I think Bortles and some of these offensive weapons are working okay for this team. They got to find ways to finish drives, and we all know that. But to pretend like they can't somehow figure that out on a week-to-week basis, I get the fans are mad. But, guys, they can learn and improve as this thing goes on.
Well, at least they should be able to. Whether they will or not, we don't know. But that, in theory, yes. And that's why you play the entire season. Although, again, I don't really love that stat, because what if you got a third and five and the play is a wide receiver screen and you throw it 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage and the guy's got three blockers out in front and he picks up 20 yards? That's a negative six on that scale. That, I mean, to me, who cares if you threw it past the line of scrimmage, if you threw it 10 feet out of bounds because you're just trying to get rid of the football? I don't know. I mean, I get in the big picture that the statistic shows that the more you throw it past the line of scrimmage, but I just think that stat to me doesn't sound like
it tells a pretty accurate picture. Well, when you look at the quarterbacks that were really good on the stat and the ones that were really bad in like the past 3 years, it makes a lot of sense. Because the
you
ones
said
that,
Bortles is number five
this year. And I'm saying that the top three, when they averaged it out over the last 3 years, were like Luck, Rodgers, and Roethlisberger. Those were the top three. And the bottom three were Alex Smith, Sam Bradford, and Ryan Tannehill on third downs. And those are all teams that have really had problems converting third downs compared to three teams that have been really good at converting third downs. I think there's something to that stat. I don't know how much, but there's something there.
There may be something. I wouldn't be one I would be relying a whole lot on personally. I got a couple more tweets directed at you. Do you want to hear them or not?
Directed at me? What did I do?
Do you want to hear them or not?
Sure.
Okay. I love keeping it real with Ryan Thursdays on Jaguars Day.
Like that guy.
See, you didn't know what these were going to entail. And when Ryan imitated Gus Bradley's "That's Unacceptable," a little pee came out. Ha, ha, ha. They found that amusing. They enjoyed that.
Oh, okay.
You didn't know how to take that. You thought they just wet themselves.
They did.
They did, because okay. They were laughing so hard.
Oh, okay. I did a Gus imitation?
Well, not real. You were just saying, you know, where you're saying that's unacceptable, you know, showing them that it's unacceptable comparing to just saying it's unacceptable,
okay.
I think. Whether you did a direct imitation
or not. I appreciate the
not.
Comments.
Yes. Maybe now that I've explained that you didn't really do an imitation of Gus Bradley, they're not finding you as funny anymore. I don't know. And then another one. So Howard is cranky today. He's always cranky.
You try taking a lap around this locker room every day.
You are always cranky. Well, that's a good point. And there's more coming in as well, but I'll try to keep you on the rails right now, so we'll ignore those that are coming in the last few minutes. Back to Gus Bradley, shall we? This is not an imitation. This is the real thing. Talking yesterday to the assembled media and talking about the players that they've got to face this weekend, starting with Tampa Bay running back Doug Martin.
It appears to me, just watching tape, that he's back to his form. You know, just his strength and his speed that he possesses. Very tough runner. I think he's, eighth in the league in rushing, something like that. So it appears that he's back to his old form and running very confidently.
Well, he went for 106 against Carolina, which is an odd number in a blowout game, along with 20 carries. Both the yards were a season high, but 4.3 a carry.
It's okay.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It's not eye popping. It's all right. It's a solid day. What he had, and basically, really coming in the previous couple of games, he was losing a lot of touches to Charles Sims out of the backfield, and that's what happens when they get behind. Charles Sims comes in, he'll catch balls. And the week before, they had about a 50-50 split on touches. So Doug Martin, they were able to stick with him this past week to some effect.
Gus Bradley also commented on the rookie quarterback there in Tampa, Jameis Winston.
Good. You know what? I'll tell you what. It's a similar situation than we went through last year. And you see really flashes of why he was picked when he was picked. You see it and you say, you know, he makes some really good plays. And then, you know, the ups and downs sometimes that you go through. And some of them are just unfortunate. You know, maybe it's a tip or an overthrow or things like that. So I think the Saints game was a classic one. Played very well, no interceptions, and played really well. And then another game he has, you know, multiple interceptions. So, you know, I think that's the challenge that they're going through with him. And it's a new offense for him. And the speed of the game. You know, I think that's the biggest transition. So he appears to be adjusting well. I think it's, you know, that consistency that they're probably looking for.
Ultimately, you want to win games. I get that. That's the biggest thing that quarterbacks are going to get judged on. But I do feel that there was a big, there was a noisy segment of the fan base. And Tony, I think you'll attest to this, that said, if you don't do everything you can to get Jameis Winston, even having Blake Bortles on the roster,
yep,
that you have, you're missing the opportunity of a lifetime. Never mind the fact that what it would have cost you to do that if you were even inclined to do that, would the Bucs be willing to do a deal like that, anything along those lines. But I will say this, they've been lying dormant. Okay.
Where are they?
Well, that's the thing. That's the nature of the internet. Don't you know by now, right? Jameis Winston's thrown 7 interceptions, including 4 last week. So he's thrown a bunch of picks. He hasn't looked like he's going to light the world on fire. He's looked like a rookie quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas Blake Bortles isn't winning games either, but statistically is on a much better pace in terms of, you know, keeping the interceptions down, touchdowns in the mid-20s, and he's on pace to throw for about 4,000 yards this year. So, you know, he statistically, Blake Bortles has a little bit of an edge in the early going. Lose this game to the Bucs, and all those people that are laying in wait out there will rise up. Along with the rest of the, you know, Jaguar Nation, which will be understandably cranky simply for the fact that they would be 1-4 at that point in time.
And they should be.
Right.
They will be, and they should be. The guy that I thought the Jaguars should have drafted is on pace for 96 catches.
No. Aren't you brilliant? You know, maybe if you would have come
here, right.
Maybe he would have come here and torn his ACL in his first practice in minicamp.
Don't think like that.
Well, I mean, you know, exactly. You don't think like that when you draft Dante Fowler Jr. either. So, anyway, moving along, Gus talking about Blake Bortles this week and how he can lead the Jaguars to victory.
Well, I think just consistent play, you know, consistency is what we're looking at. I mentioned before that, you know, we were going to look at some situations and, you know, and try to find out. And we did. And I think we saw some inefficiencies in some area as a team or as an offense. And those are the things that we address, we will address this whole week starting today. So, you know, it's not just him. I think he, you know, even in the second half, he came out, I think, he was 6 for 7. You know, so it wasn't like he came out in the second half and struggled. And his throwing percentage went down. You know, he came out and made some good throws, but it was a tip ball, a batted ball, an incomplete, got pressure. You know, those things, I think he wants to find a way, even if he is facing pressure, to somehow make a play. And, you know, that's what we saw. I think some of the inefficiencies came with communication. We had some errors with communication, and there were some pressures, and, you know, that got to him. But that's the detail part that needs to be corrected.
Well, it looked like the communication was on the one sack. Can tried to pick up the blitzer, but so did Yeldon. Guy blitzed unblocked. And then there was another one that caused the pressure when Wisniewski snapped it before the other guys were ready. I mean, Beatles was still looking back at the quarterback, so everybody got beat there. So shouldn't be having communication stuff in week 4.
Right, but in terms of the consistency with Blake Bortles, you know, as when you look at the final numbers, you're like, 298 yards passing, threw a touchdown, didn't throw any interceptions. That's pretty good, right? Yeah. But then you look at how many completions or how many attempts, it takes to get to that number. And whereas you would rather a thrown incompletion than take a sack or be intercepted, there are, you know, I just think the pass-to-pass consistency, he does get in a rhythm sometimes, but there are other times when you're like, wow, he was really off the mark.
I mean, he has some lost possessions, you know, where it's first down, gets a pass batted down. You know, one of those bat downs, a lineman didn't cut the guy. Okay, so be it. The other one, no excuse. And then he throws like a back shoulder on third and whatever that Allen Robinson has to die for, can't catch it. So it's just like the ebbs and flows of Blake's game right now is like not from quarter to quarter. It's from drive to drive. Those need to be ironed out. You would have won the game.
Right, but is that unreasonable to have those at this stage of his career, 16 games in to his NFL career, as he as he got ready to start this past game? He had played one full season's worth as a starting quarterback.
It's not unreasonable to say that he should there were opportunities there for him to win the game on Sunday.
I think that's fair, but I mean, at the same time, you're going to have some degree of these growing pains, yeah, right?
Well, my nitpick is I thought they should have put the game in his hands a little more, even though it was the end of the first half. And I wrote about this on Tuesday. I thought it was clock mismanagement 101 at the end of the first half. Too much wasted time. And the excuse they gave is, well, we didn't want to get the ball to the Colts back. Colts really had the only time the Colts had done anything on offense in the first half, you gave them 40 yards.
Five penalties.
Yeah, and so, you know, chances are they would have, Hasbeck would have taken a knee and gone to the clubhouse.
All right, let's take a time out here. We will come back to Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL coming up. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. We're live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing. On this date, October 8th, 1933, Boston Redskins. That's right, the Boston Redskins. Running back Cliff Battles became the first player to top 200 yards in a game, rushing for 215 in a 21-20 victory, Tony, over the New York Giants.
Of course.
Of course. 1995, Dolphins' Dan Marino broke Fran Tarkenton's NFL career completions record at the time. And born on this date, coincidentally enough, in 1959, one of the quarterbacks who went before Dan Marino in the 1983 draft, the legendary Tony Eason, born on this date, 56 years old today. Martin Mayhew, former Florida State and Tampa Bay Buccaneer cornerback, now the general manager of the Detroit Lions, born 50 years ago today in 1965. And Rashan Salaam, regarded as one of the worst Heisman winners to ever play in the National Football League. You know, I looked up his numbers. He's actually a 1,000-yard receiver as a rookie with 10 touchdowns, and then it just quickly went downhill from there. I'm assuming injuries. I can't remember if injuries or just ineffectiveness were part of the equation. But first year was pretty good, and then he only played parts of three seasons after that and was out of the National Football League for good at that point. First Coast Roofing, Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, brings you this date in First Coast, or this date in football history. I'll get it right. 287-7756, that's the number you need to know. 287-7756. If you have roofing issues at your home, at your office, place of business, re-roofs, repairs, if it has to do with your roof, call Bob Roberts. License number CCC056797 for First Coast Roofing. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Week 5 of the NFL gets started tonight with Indianapolis and Houston. The big question coming into today was whether or not Andrew Luck would be able to play. Word coming down that it looks like it will be Matt Hasselbeck going for the Indianapolis Colts again tonight. The Colts did re-sign backup quarterback Josh Johnson yesterday. Luck apparently may try to throw in pregame to see if he can go, but the reports coming out right now are that Matt Hasselbeck is expected to start that game for the Indianapolis Colts against Houston tonight. Seattle running back Marshawn Lynch missed practice yesterday. He's being called day-to-day right now with a hamstring injury. He is expected to be a game-time decision again this weekend. I mentioned Greg Hardy on Monday as one of the players coming off of their four-game suspensions this week. The Cowboys defensive end is as brash as ever. After being found guilty in a bench trial of assaulting a female and communicating threats, a decision that was abandoned upon appeal when the victim wouldn't cooperate. We later found out that there was some kind of settlement between Hardy and the alleged victim, where he threw her onto a bed of assault weapons. Hardy said yesterday after his first day of practice, quote, "I hope I come out guns blazing," and then went on to comment about playing Tom Brady, saying that he hopes Tom brings Giselle and that Giselle brings her sister and all of her friends. So
he's such an idiot.
Yeah, he says, indifferent to the whole situation as he's ever been.
Apparently so. I mean, I don't. The guns blazing comment in and of itself doesn't bother me. Being used by him,
nah, it doesn't
bother. Is he smart enough to pull off a double entendre here, or
he's just a moron?
Is he just using inappropriate phraseology based on his recent track record. I don't know. Couldn't tell you as far as that goes. Coming up, we got TJ Reeves from the Bucks sideline. He's a Bucks sideline reporter for their radio network, and he will join us in about 10 minutes as we get into everything going on with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, this week's opponent. Ryan, this one in from at Jags Press Box, who I have not muted on Twitter, by the way. And I feel like I'm getting a lot of exploratory questions thrown my way. Hey, what do you think about this? Oh, I'll tell you. Oh, I'm not muted. Could we get a Marquise Lee update?
I did see that.
Yes, and what player is Oakland willing to part with in exchange for him?
That would be nobody, and there is no update. He did not practice yesterday.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So that would
just gave a look like, wait a minute.
I think that's right.
Are we in Groundhog Day? Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. And so that I would assume that means he doesn't play this week, and he becomes more and more of a non-factor.
Certainly, for the time until he can. Until he's healthy, he is a non-factor at this point in time. Now, Brandon Linder obviously lost for the year.
Had his surgery yesterday.
Yeah, and hopefully that will go well and everything. You know, he'll be able to have a full off season next year where he's not, you know, rehabbing half of it. And but, you know, Ryan, for a guy who is regarded as the best player in his position group on the offensive line, I find myself not being as worried about his absence as some other guys' absence. Primarily because I think the depth there that they've got, be it Can, be it Shatley, in this case they're going to go with Can as a starter, I'm more comfortable going with them than I would be at some other positions.
Yeah, and that's you know, that is the reason why you say, okay, it's a big loss, but one that you they hope they can overcome.
You're better suited to overcome that than some other spots.
And you know, one of the reasons they went with Can is that Shatley's walking around with a big cast on his thumb. So I don't know if he was another guy who got hurt in practice last week, because the natural assumption was that Shatley would start if Linder couldn't go, since he replaced him in the preseason game,
right,
et cetera, et cetera. For Cam, this is a gigantic opportunity toward a starting role at left guard in 2016.
Yeah, Lagerman even suggested he wouldn't be shocked, because Cam is that big, physical, prototypical bruiser that if he plays well, maybe he stays at right guard and Linder plays left guard. I don't think it matters all that much. If you have two good guards, you go with wherever, you know, the best combination you're comfortable with. But regard your point being, he is basically setting himself up with 12 weeks of solid play to go in as a starter into next all season.
Yeah, and it would do the coaching staff and front office a favor, is they wouldn't have to project how he's going to play. They'll have 850 snaps of tape.
Right. So. How do you think he played last week?
He's okay. You know, the one thing you notice about AJ is he doesn't get pushed back a lot, because he's a pretty strong guy, and also he knows how to hold. He got away with some stuff. I think Bocelli mentioned it during the broadcast that they could have called it. So, but to me, that means you're cagey. You can.
Or lucky. We'll find out as the time goes on.
But he showed some decent recovery. And it looked like the times he made a mistake, it was more blocking the wrong guy, which is probably more correctable than if he was just getting overpowered. But I thought, I mean, he was definitely better than the guy lining up to his outside, because I think Parnell struggled.
Let me jump ahead here. There's a final cut we had from Gus yesterday. He was asked about Luke Jokel's play. Now, you know, the offensive line had a 100-yard rusher behind him, and it wasn't a jailbreak. I mean, as many times as Blake Bortles threw, you had the obvious miscommunication between Yeldon and Can on the one sack. You had the bad snap that, you know, led to a jailbreak. But, you know, it was pretty solid performance all around. And Gus was asked if he felt it was Luke Jokel, maybe his best game as a Jaguar.
He played pretty well. You know, I think where Luke's game has picked up is in the run game. I think he's done a nice job there. And in his you know, his pass protection as well. So most complete game, you know, comparing him, you know, I'm not sure if we compared him yet, but he played pretty well.
A couple things on Jokel. I always love how they say, well, you know, the run game. He's not here to, he's here to protect the passer. And specifically next week when 99 comes to town.
Sure.
That's going to be the first measuring stick for Jokel. So what I would be encouraged by from a Jaguars perspective with Luke is you saw in the preseason, he looked like he was wearing roller skates on a couple plays. You didn't see that on Sunday. So it looked like he anchored better. So I think he had an encouraging game.
Yeah, I like you, we've heard a lot that he's very good with the run blocking. So when, you know, Gus says he's seen the most improvement in run blocking, like,
so what?
You got a lot of room for improvement on the other side. And Watt's going to line up on.
He's going to get.
He's going to move around and try to take advantage. Now, if they feel that they've got a matchup that he can whip every single time, they'll put him there every single time. But he will move around. Parnell's got his hands full next week as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's an equal opportunity tormentor.
Right, but overall, I mean, the line solid. I thought the performance was pretty solid. I'm sure, you know, you go through, you can grade some mistakes along the way.
Well, where they definitely improved is Yeldon had some breathing room to get to the line of scrimmage. The number of bad runs were greatly diminished from the New England game. And also, they did a much better job as an offense on first down. Still got to score points, obviously. But, you know, to get over 400 yards, you did enough things to, like, get across midfield. Now you got to finish those drives.
On the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, what is the latest on Denard Robinson?
Hasn't been an update for a while. He was hurt in week two. They said sprained MCL. That's usually a 4-week injury. So, you know, yeah, he has not done anything like a limited practice yet. So he's, I think he's a little bit away. I got a question this morning. Why can't they use short-term IR? They've already used that spot on Rashad Green. Each team is only allowed to use one guy.
One time. Which I guess they're trying to keep you from playing roster shenanigans, you know, and stashing guys on short-term IR that you don't want to otherwise cut or expose to waivers. But boy, is it pretty restrictive, you know, in terms of when you got to decide, are you carrying six or seven injured guys throughout the way, making all your inactive decisions for you on game day and leaving you with what's left? Or, you know, do you try to sneak some guys onto the practice squad depending on their status on the roster? Well, that's the game in the NFL, and that everybody is playing by the same set of rules. We'll go down to Tampa coming up next. TJ Reeves, Buck sideline reporter, will join us. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you previewing Jags, Buccaneers this Sunday at Raymond James. And from what Wes said, who is the head of the Bold City Brigade St. Augustine chapter, he was told that around 8,000 tickets sold to that game in the Duval County area. So you can expect a large contingent of your brethren to be on hand this Sunday in Tampa. Not just the 2,000. No, we're doing we're working.
So you got to do a remote broadcast. Get the RV out there.
Do you think I was not willing to do that? Do you think I did not shoot that up the ladder? I got to say the response was lukewarm would have been perhaps overestimating the response. Didn't really get much of that. Although I heard Rick Ballew, I think, is going to be at the tailgate. So we may go live to the tailgate with the Bold City Brigade on Sunday during part of the pregame show. But no, we are not making the trip. Would have gladly made the trip down to Tampa. Not going to happen this coming up weekend. We'll make the trip now, though. We'll talk to TJ Reeves next. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious.
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
Winston throws, and it's intercepted. It's Josh Norman. He's going to have his second pick six of the season.
That's not Gene Deckerhoff.
No, it's not. That's not the Tampa Bay Buck Radio Network, apparently, on the call. I'm going to guess that's Mick Mixon. Was that?
It's not Chris Myers.
Maybe it was. I guess that might have been the TV call of the game. Yeah, good call on that one. That's what it was. But what does Jameis Winston have in common with Blake Bortles? Both top three picks. Both got picked by Josh Norman and taken to the house so far this year. So both have won only one game in the early part of the season. They're going to face off this Sunday in Tampa. We got TJ Reeves. He's the Buck sideline guy. And you would know that if you follow him on Twitter because he is at Buck sideline guy. He's also a host on TuneIn Radio and a host on SEC14.com. What's up, TJ? How are you?
Always good to be with you, boys. You're trying to put me in a good mood right away, talking Jameis.
Yeah, well, just the facts, ma'am. You know, what about Winston? Look, rookie quarterbacks are going to have growing pains for sure. But six touchdowns, seven picks. I mean, what do you look at when you've seen what he's done in the first month of the season? What is he doing well, and what is the biggest concern through four games?
Obviously, the second part, the biggest concern, is the interceptions. He had five total turnovers last week. You can't do that. You can't win. He knows that. He's talked about it in the aftermath of the game. Got to tighten that up, make better decisions. What I do like is his ability to shake off bad plays and bad outings. He definitely has the right mentality to go about this as a professional, and I would fully expect he's going to play a better game on Sunday. I mean, he did not play well in the opener against Tennessee, where it was a pick six right away at the beginning of the game to fall behind 14-0. You eventually get blown out. Come back the next week, and he performed very well guys in a hostile, loud Superdome, led the team on two great touchdown drives into the first half, started the second half, and helped put the game away in the fourth quarter. So his ability to shake off bad plays, his poise, even through adversity and loud crowd, that's been impressive so far.
TJ, obviously two great receivers in Jackson and Evans. Mike had that hamstring, 13 yards a catch, no touchdown. Do you see him breaking out this week?
That is the guy that everybody is asking, when does he have this huge game in terms of down the field and big plays and touchdowns, and this may be that week where they try to get him involved. But obviously Buccaneers have a concern at offensive line with a couple of rookies that are in there. In order to throw it deep, you got to protect. You got to protect on those seven-step drops. They had trouble with that last week against Carolina. So it will be a challenge, but Evans is definitely a weapon that they want to get more involved. I mean, they targeted Vincent Jackson 15 times last week. That's one of the reasons why he had the huge day that he had. But, I mean, that's quite a 1-2 combo if the Buccaneers can protect Jameis Winston in this game.
The offensive backfield, Doug Martin was a guy that a lot of people were talking about throughout the preseason. Looked like he was back to that form that he had a couple years ago. He's had a couple really good weeks, a couple down weeks thus far this season. How do you think they're trying to feel out what to do in that backfield with Martin and Sims right now?
He had 105 yards last week, so that was his first 100-yard game of the season, the eighth one of his career, and he does look a little leaner. He is running with authority, and make no mistake, they want to establish the run with him. They've used Sims as kind of a 1A. They will put him in on the third or fourth series probably of the first half no matter what. They love to throw it to him out of the backfield, but they will hand it to him some as well. So they clearly want to establish Doug Martin, and the goal would be get Martin 20, 22, 25 touches if you can in the game, especially if you can get up in the second half of a game and feed him the football. And again, he is a guy that has been breaking tackles at the second and third level, running hard, even in small stature for Doug Martin. So I know the Buccaneers want him to follow up what he did last week, where he was able to make some plays in the run game for sure.
Yeah, and certainly they got the run game going last week, TJ. But overall, how has the offensive line played, particularly in protection? The Jags have not been a team that's gotten a lot of pressure, certainly not just rushing four down linemen. Is it a case of the Bucs, have they been susceptible to pass rush? Or, you know, when you combine that with a rookie quarterback, sometimes those guys don't get rid of the ball as quickly as you like them to. What's been the state of the pass protection?
Well, it's been good at times. I would say overall the grade is probably average. It's been good at times. Now, last week they struggled to keep the Carolina defense off of Jameis Winston for that game. And again, you've got a rookie left tackle in Donovan Smith out of Penn State. And then you've got the right guard who, by everyone's account, including Lovie Smith, including the offensive line coach George Warhoff, and others that are analyzing this team, the right guard, Ali Marpet, out of Division III Hobart College, who this team drafted in the second round. And Mike, you love my stats when I come on with you. That is the first time that a player from a Division III school has been drafted in the first two rounds of the draft since World War II, since that had happened. But Marpet is living up to that and has held his own so far through the first four games of the season, so, and graded out well. So they do have a couple of young guys. It is fluid. You mentioned young quarterback. You want to get the ball out of his hand with screen passes, bubble screens, you know, three-step drops, things like that. So you can work through some things, but the line is definitely an evolving work in progress with some young guys.
Switching over to defense, 30th against the run. Have they been that bad, or is somewhat misleading?
I think it's somewhat misleading. They're better against the run right now, although if you look at that Texans game, the Texans were really effective in the second half and in the fourth quarter against them, running the ball with Alfred Blue and kind of a patchwork line. So you shake your head a little bit at that. They were better against the run last week. Yes, Cam Newton had some yards running around, but Jonathan Stewart had 50 yards. I believe their running backs total had something like 60 for the entire game. So the run defense is good. The challenge is going to be pass rush and pass defense for this team.
You know, you talked about Jameis Winston earlier, and a guy who looks like he can handle some of the problems that he's having here in the early season. There were a lot of questions about that with him coming out of Florida State because he simply didn't have to worry about that while he was in Florida State. There was no lack of success while he was there. Does it feel like he's just being confused by what he's seeing out there on the field, like most rookies go through right now? How is he dealing with in-game trying to make adjustments to what he's seeing from opposing defenses?
And that's a great point, that you now have to handle NFL defenses that have seen you now for three, or in this case, four games. They're going to scheme against what you don't do well. They're going to blitz you, disguise those blitzes, show you things that you haven't seen on tape, and you've got to counterpunch. You've got to adjust to that. And if you're Jameis Winston for this week, you've got to make sure on especially the early throws that your guy is there and a defensive back is not lurking. You got to see it before you do it. You hear Gruden talk about that all the time on Monday Night Football. He used to talk about it all the time here. It seems kind of simple, but it is also a creed that you have to live by as an NFL quarterback. A lot of times you better see what you're doing, visualize it, and actually see it before you do it, because he has had some occasions this year, and this happens with rookies, where you haven't seen it. You haven't looked. And now you make a mistake that is very costly for your team. So let's see if that doesn't improve for this week.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers sideline reporter TJ Reeves here with us on 1010XL. TJ, since Lavonte David was drafted out of Nebraska, he's been one of the best young linebackers in the National Football League. Statistically very quiet this year. Stats don't always tell the story. So from your vantage point, has he played as well and is just not putting up the numbers for whatever reasons? Or is there something missing in his game this year since he signed that big contract in the offseason?
Well, I will say this, Mike. I do the radio show with him on Monday night, and he will be the first one to tell you he's not made enough impact plays. He said it on a radio show. He is a spectacular player who sacking the quarterback, taking the ball away, that's his forte. He had an interception right in his hands that would have stopped the Carolina drive in the red zone last week in a 24-10 game. Very unlike Lavonte David to not make that play. They need him to begin to start making those plays for this defense to be effective, because he is a special player. He is a guy that they are counting on to make a bunch of tackles and big plays when they're there. So you're right. I mean, it's been a disappointment. I don't think it has anything to do right now with the contract, just from the standpoint that he got the raise before the season began, and I don't think that he's not that type of player where it's because he has a contract. I think the reality here is that you have a player who may be pressing a little bit, who's got guys around him that are pressing a little bit. So that all kind of stirs into one pot with Lavonte David, but I believe he'll snap out of it as well.
Sticking with the defense in the secondary, when did Altron Werner enter Lovie Smith's doghouse, and how is he going to get out of there?
Guys, I don't know. I think it's unfair to characterize it as a doghouse here at this point. I think it is
play
more
five snaps.
Well, I will say that it's more to the point of Tim Jennings was available, who played with Lovie Smith in Chicago and knows the defense, and at the moment they're trying that. And that is the route that they're going. I don't know that he did anything specifically to get in the doghouse, per se. They're choosing to go with somebody else. And that may change for this week. I mean, Altron Werner may start in this game. Jonathan Banks, one of the other DBs, has an injured knee, was not able to play last week, was not able to practice yesterday. So by necessity, you may see Werner more in this game because of that. We'll find out. But I think it's a misnomer to say that it's something that he did to get in the doghouse.
I'm sure the Tampa Bay fans had some kind of lowered expectations going into the season because they were going to be starting a rookie quarterback, some of the issues along the offensive line. But a couple of the weeks have gone really south on them here early on in the season. Have the expectations changed at all for this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team? What do they expect to see this week with Jacksonville coming to town?
Well, I think, you know, the expectations are still the same, that you want to get wins. And let's be honest. I mean, you guys are talking to me and saying, what do you mean he played five snaps? He's in the doghouse. You got a terrible football team on your hands. You've lost 11 games in a row. You got a head coach that's on the hot seat. If you're a Buccaneer fan looking at this game, that's W. And you've been looking at this as a W since the beginning. You got to go take care of business. If you are the Bucs players, you have the task of facing the Jaguars straight ahead. Here in this game, and you know that any NFL team can get it done in any given week. But for fans, for media, for observers, they've been looking at this since the schedule came out and saying, win. That's a win at home. You have to win that game with Jacksonville, especially young quarterback and a lot of young personnel. So we'll see. Certainly, Mike, as you know, we've talked about this in the past. The league is different from week to week. And in this case, somebody's going to get well. Buccaneers have had trouble winning at home. Jacksonville's had trouble winning on the road. Something's got to give.
They both had trouble winning, period, right now. And I guarantee they're both looking at it like this is the best opportunity we have in the near or short term, near to or long term, I should say, to get a victory, or at least one that we go in feeling we should be the better team. Only one of them can be at the end of the day, and we'll find out who's got the more points on the scoreboard. TJ Reeves, Buccaneers sideline reporter. Follow him at Buck Sideline Guy. And, of course, you can check him out at SEC14.com. He's also a host on TuneIn Radio, and he works very closely there with that Levante David character. TJ, always appreciate it, man. Enjoy the game this weekend.
We'll see what happens, boys. Be well. Take care.
All right, there he goes. TJ Reeves, Buccaneers sideline guy here with us on 1010XL. When we come back, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you which player currently injured for the Jags would be more vital to a Jaguar attempted victory, at least, on Sunday. Julius Thomas, Paul Posluszny, we'll get to your reaction to that coming up. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, coming down the stretch here, Jaguars today on this Thursday morning. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. We've got XL Primetime coming your way next. What was that? Did I hear someone encroaching onto my territory?
Thursday Night Football.
That's right. Thursday Night Football. How would Hacker introduce that game, Ryan? What can you do for me?
Tonight, an AFC South grudge match. Matt Hasselbeck. Who's the quarterback for Houston?
That would be
Ryan Mallett.
We'll work on that, but that's you're getting in the ballpark now. How do you see this game going, seriously, on Sunday, before we get to the fan feedback spotlight today?
I'm going to pick the Bucs to win.
Are you? Is it just at this point you're not ready to pick the Jags to win any game?
Pretty much. Yeah. I think Jameis is going to bounce back from that train wreck game. Mike Evans is going to have a big game. And Gerald McCoy could have a big game. So I think they have a lot of players who are pretty talented. And just you don't see – Jaguars aren't ready. I'm not going to pick the Jaguars win until they win a game, another game.
And I can get that. I totally get that. I'll probably pick the Jags to win this game simply because if you don't pick them now, I can't see – you know, when's the next time you're going to have an opportunity to feel good about picking them to win a football game? I don't necessarily feel good, but I think they've got – a puncher's chance. I don't think Tampa is all
that
great.
Well, they definitely have that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they could, you know, they could, it could, it's a, I think it's a toss up game.
Right.
Suggested by the line.
Right. Why Mike Evans as opposed to Vincent Jackson? You just think he's kind of due at this point in time?
That's the big thing is, you know, I think, you know, like in the Jaguars, they tried to dial things up the last couple weeks to get Lewis involved, get him some touches.
Right.
I think that's what Tampa is going to do with Evans.
It was interesting because 2 weeks ago they threw it to him 17 times, and they just were not connecting. He only caught three balls a couple of weeks ago. You wonder because he did obviously miss half the preseason. Then he missed the first couple of weeks. Or he played, I guess he played technically in week two, but didn't record a stat, didn't play much. He was active in week two. So, been a slow start to his sophomore campaign. What about you, Tony? How do you see it going on Sunday?
Sloppy, honestly, between both these teams and all. I expect some mistakes to be made in this game. And, look, I think for me, I don't know who I'm going to pick in it yet. I think it's fair for Jaguars fans out there to expect this team to win this game because how many more can you expect them to win despite what happened last Sunday? If your expectations before the season were this team to win 6 to 8 games, then this is a game that they need to have.
Yep.
And if that was your expectation, you don't have to be rational about what you see this team doing in the first month of the season going to Tampa and say, well, they've been bad for the first month, so now I don't expect them to win. No, you know, it doesn't work that way with fans. If they expected something, it's fair for them to continue to expect that kind of outcome. It's difficult to pick the Jags any week right now with the problems that they're having, but this is a good chance for them to go win a football game. In the end, I'll probably take them something like 17-16 and just hope they find a way.
Yeah, and look, it's that way in the National Football League, too. It's not just, you know, fans can look and, you know, while they've been losing, I'm still going to have the expectation that they win. Funny things happen in the National Football League. You look how badly the Buccaneers played in week one, and they were going to New Orleans, and everyone thought, oh my goodness, this is going to be the beatdown of the week. And the Bucks delivered the beatdown, or at least got the victory against New Orleans in probably the game they'd be least expected to win early in the season, just based on the way they had played in the opener and all that. So funny things happen in the NFL, but you know, just counting on it turning for no good reason, I think the Jags need to play better. Blake Bortles needs to be more accurate, particularly, you know, last year they'd get to the red zone, they'd bog down. Right now they're getting just outside the red zone too often. You know, right into that 40-yard range, that seems to be where drives are falling apart for this football team.
Dead zone, it's back.
It is, you know, and right, the dead zone outside the red zone. At least let's get to the opportunity for Jason Myers to get some kicks. By the way, first time we talked about this, you and I, this week, were you surprised that they didn't kick the tires on some kickers this week?
Yes, I was, because they should have.
I thought so.
You know, I was listening to this station on Monday night. Oh, they have to stick with him. No, they don't.
Yeah. Why do you have to stick with him?
Yeah, he has a big leg. Hasn't shown it. Yeah, right. So.
We've seen how many kickers have already got lost their jobs in the first month of the season? A bunch
sure.
of them.
Yeah, so I would have brought some guys in on Tuesday and, you know, see what they got, because it's not good so far.
Yeah, it's funny because in the preseason or the off season, you look at what happened with Connor Barth. Connor Barth was in Tampa, went to Denver. They got rid of him. Brandon McManus is healthy. Now he's back in Tampa after they went with that Brinza guy who was atrocious. I heard Jeff Prosser going through it this morning. He's right. It's just a funny world we live in.
Well, that shows you, you know, the Jaguars. Yeah, well, the Jaguars were spoiled for the last decade in the fact that they had just had one guy. It's naturally a transient position. So, I mean, let's say they would have made a move this week and brought somebody in and cut Jason Myers. He probably would have been out there in a week, 2 weeks ago, or in 2 weeks. So they could have, if they felt differently, they could have brought Myers back. So, I would have extorted
a short leash. At least, would you say? I mean, if he misses,
you would. If you're a Jaguar fan, you should hope that at some point they, if he keeps missing, they have enough.
But I mean, if he misses a kick under 50 yards this week and they lose by a single score, and that could have been the difference in the game, no matter what point the game comes in. I mean, is he on that kind of thing right now where he has to almost be perfect in the near term?
He absolutely should be, but judging by how they've handled some other things here,
not necessarily going to be the case.
No way.
All right, let's get to the fan feedback spotlight today. Who would help the Jags towards victory more? Would it be Julius Thomas? Would it be Paul Posluszny? Tony, what did we get today?
From Irish Jaguar, JT80, the defense is okay. Other than the one game they've been functional, the offense needs a spark. From Eric Puzz, we won without JT. We haven't won without Puzz yet. # Jaguars logic. From Cristiano, JT, red zone offense needs him. From Adam, Julius Thomas for sure. Guy is a game changer. Puzz just isn't. # free Julius. From Stoff, Julius Thomas, if we score more than the other team, we win. # wins are rarity. # demand more. From Alvaro, I haven't seen Julius on Jags offense. Posluszny beast, the proven talent in a Jaguars uniform. From Daniel, Julius Thomas, as we brought him in to score touchdowns, we got to score more points. From Joey, Puzz, he does a lot for the D. Not all of it shows in his stats, and the depth at linebacker isn't great. And from Joe, JT, got to give Puzz credit, though. Run D was great before he got hurt last week. From Chris, red zone needs some love, which equals Julius Thomas. And from Black Dog Express, according to Martineau, it's Thomas because his resume says so, but Puzz will be missed most.
All right, a couple of things here on the text line I'll get to in just a second if we have time when we look at what we got Facebook-wise on this question today. Let's see, Thomas, Paul Posluszny. He'd probably end up with a pair of interceptions as well as pressure and leading to several sacks of Winston. Puzz, Thomas, probably, I would say two-thirds, one-third Thomas at least today. And look, I don't disagree with that necessarily.
No.
But I'm concerned if Paul Posluszny doesn't play because he has been strong against the run. I know a lot of people are talking about, you know, always say, oh, he makes tackles 6 to 8 yards down the field. I think Paul Posluszny has played pretty well so far this season. And, you know, you got Thurston Armbrister in there. You don't have Jeremiah George. He's on the Bucs roster right now. And, you know, that's I don't know if Armbrister's ready for a starring role in the National Football League. I hope Posluszny plays, Ryan. I mean, it's not, as Gus said, a typical high ankle sprain, but you know, you got to wonder how effective he's going to be. I'm sure if he feels like he can give it a go, if it's just a pain tolerance issue, he'll do everything he can to be out there. But how effective will he be if he's playing on less than 100% leg?
Yeah, I think that's what their key is. I don't expect he's not going to practice today, and I don't expect him to even, you know, take a walk through tomorrow. So he's earned sort of that equity to just prepare mentally. But if he can't go, do you play Dan Scuda and Telvin Smith on the field a little bit in a sub package? Do you just say in Thurston you trust for an every down roll? So some things to consider.
A couple on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line before we get out of here. Still a lot of winnable games left to play this year. If not, we're getting off the Gus bus and walking. In other words, go win some games. If you want us to stay on the bus.
And honestly, I think it's completely fair for Jags fans to expect to beat Tampa. I that's more than fair for them to expect to go down there and get a win this week.
Right, and even if they don't expect it, they should demand it. You know what I'm saying? Even if you say in your heart of hearts, you say, well, I don't know if I can expect it, but I'm not letting them off the hook.
No.
You know what I mean? We're in year three. If you're going to tell us it's built, that the roster's here, yeah, you got injuries. Everyone's got injuries. You need to go beat the Buccaneers, who were the worst team in the National Football League last year. This one on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, it would be smart to bring Marquise Lee back after the bye. If it's not healed at that point, put him on IR and pick up the best wide receiver on a practice squad somewhere in the National Football League. I think if Marquise Lee is ready in week 6, week 7, whatever the case, they're going to put him out there as quickly as possible. They need all the help they can get right now. I mean, it'd be a luxury if you could wait. They don't have enough going on offense right now to wait. The second he's ready to go, I think you have to give it a shot. And if he re-injures himself, so be it at that point in time. But, you know, he's not doing them any good at this point. Look, I get the frustration. I'm not necessarily blaming Marquise Lee. I know some guys think, oh, you got to be tough. You got to play through stuff. I don't know the extent of what his injury is. And I don't think most of the people saying that really know what the extent of what his injury is. Sometimes you're hurt and sometimes your body betrays you. I don't think that's necessarily a case of Marquise Lee not wanting to play. How do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, he wants to play. It's just, you know.
It's frustrating. It's disappointing.
This is where we can't even like get through the curtain. Okay, who clears who? What's the status of the hamstring injury? So all this injury stuff, coaches defer to the medical team. So we're in all this gray area. We're just guessing.
All right, what do you have coming up the next few days, getting ready for the Jags Bucks?
Well, I'll talk right about Jameis for Sunday. Hayes Carlion is going to write something about how the Jags O-line has to deal with Gerald McCoy. So those are two things. And then we'll have our full section on Monday.
All right, there you go. Expected to be about 8,000 from the Duval area making the pilgrimage down to Raymond James to support.
By the way, isn't that the best word? Pilgrimage.
Pilgrimage.
Instead of saying trip.
The trip. It's a pilgrimage, yeah. Which nothing wrong with that.
I saw it described as an annexation of Tampa.
Yeah,
all right, we'll take whatever.
Yesterday,
let's just get a W,
8,
man. I don't care.
Call it
anything you like, you know. But it's good to see him going in such numbers from the 904 area code. All right, that does it for us, Ryan. Thank you. We will talk to you next week. For Fat Tony, for Ryan O'Halloran, I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks to Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato. Today, XL Primetime, just moments away. We'll say hello to those guys and get their afternoon started next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.